I'm running a little bit late, but I'll be with you here in just a second. Let me just get my notes opened here.
That's why you're going to have to learn how to talk in acronym.
All right. So we are jumping back to Revelation. Now, we were in Revelation 2 a month or two ago. Okay? We were in we were going to do just Revelation 2, Revelation 3, and talk about these churches and these people. And you know, it's so funny there, and I'm going to show you a map in just a minute. There's a closeness to all these churches, and yet the churches are so different, all of them. And the leaders of the churches are different, and the leaders all have their own hang-ups. Now, not every church is the leader got a big problem. Two of the seven churches, Jesus doesn't even say anything to the church leader. But in five of the churches, Jesus is like, hey, man, you've got some problems, and let me tell you what they are. And so, now, I'm going to do a review, okay? A review.
Thank you.
Now, we looked at this phrase that's used seven times in Revelation 2 and 3. To the angel of the church of blank, and it has the city's name there. Now, I told you that when I did my commentary in 2010, when it was published, I thought the angel here, the messenger, remember we looked at that word? It's the word messenger. And I took it as the guardian angel of each church. Okay? Human beings, we all have guardian angels. Okay? We have guardian angels. We have countries apparently have angels over them. If you go to the book of Daniel, it's interesting. Michael the archangel is speaking with Daniel, and he says, hey, Daniel, I got to go because I have to go and engage the prince of, and he names the city. I'm thinking it's Persia or something like that. But here's an angel, a heavenly angel, and he has to go and engage this angel that's over this one country. So they're doing battle. It's very interesting. So my thought was, if countries have guardian angels and humans, individuals have angels, like Peter in the book of Acts. It's his angel. Remember when Peter was knocking on the door and they thought he was in jail? And this girl says, hey, Peter's at the door. And they said, it must be his angel. Okay, interesting. So what did we, what? Let me ask you this. We saw that there were seven different definitions for angel in the Bible. Now, what were some of the angels? Okay, some of the angels were what kind of angels?
Messenger.
What was it?
Messenger.
Yeah, they're messengers. They're all messengers. But think of high and low. Some angels are what?
Demonic, and some are.
Yeah, some are heavenly angels. Some are demonic angels. Okay? Paul in Ephesians chapter 2, the Apostle Paul says, Satan is the spirit who's now at work in the children of disobedience, in unbelievers. So when you look around, don't be surprised when you see all hell breaking loose in society. Why shouldn't we be surprised? Well, it was happening at the time of Noah in the flood. It says the violence was great in the earth. And it's, you know, it talks about all about those things. Okay, so basically, we shouldn't be surprised now if, you know, there's troubles like that. Okay, so one of them was demonic angels. One of them was heavenly angels. Another one is, if we're taking this as the pastor of the church to the preaching elder, the teaching elder, the head elder, if you could say that. Write these words down, John. What kind of an angel would that be? What kind of a messenger would that be? Not a heavenly messenger per se, or a demonic. I'm talking in a spiritual sense. invisible angel, one that you couldn't see unless he reveals himself. But this messenger is a human messenger, right? So what we can't do is we can't see the word angel in the Bible and say, oh, it's talking about the angels in heaven and the angels that were at Jesus' birth and that. You've always got to look at the context. And obviously, I went when I wrote my commentary with this being a guardian angel, but now I so much more clearly see. So what did we talk? There's what I told you last time. The angel, angelos, means messenger. Okay. They can refer to heavenly, demonic, human, or one other one is the angel of the Lord, the messenger of the Lord in the Old Testament, who's God himself, most likely Jesus. The scholars call it a Christ, like Christ, a Christophany. Ophany is appearance, Christ appearance, okay? And so it's an Old Testament appearance of Jesus, and he takes on a human body, and he and two heavenly angels go see Abraham. Remember that? It's like awesome story. Wouldn't that be cool to have God visit you and have dinner? Wow, that would be amazing. Okay, now the question that we talked about months ago, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, is why are we taking this as the teaching elder of the church? Why? Why aren't you taking it as a heavenly angel anymore? And here's the reason. The angels or the messengers of the churches in Revelation 2 and 3 are human messengers. Why? 98 of 108 uses of you. Now we're only talking about two chapters in the Bible. It just doesn't seem possible that there could be 108 uses of you and your. But 98, look at that. 98 of 108, that's over 90% of the uses in Revelation 2 and 3 are singular in the Greek Bible. In other words, they're addressed to a particular person. When I say, hey, you, you're not looking around like you all. Okay? When we in Texas say, hey, y'all, now you know I'm talking to y'all. Now, what's really cool, and I checked this again in the King James version of the Bible. You know the old King James from 1611? It's got all the these and thous and thy and all those words like that. It's very handy. If you're ever reading the Bible and you're wondering, like in an epistle, you might want to just keep a copy of the King James handy, because in the King James version, whenever God's using a plural you, he does, see, when in the New King James, it's just you and yours, so you can't tell if he's... Let me just put it up here, okay? It's in the text we're going to look at this morning, okay? This is the text we're looking at. To the messenger, the teaching elder, or you could say like a pastor, okay? They didn't have pastors in those days. They called them elders, and they always referred to the one that seemed to be the one that was basically the one who was getting paid in those days. He was worthy of double honor than other elders, okay? So basically, the teaching elder of the church in the city called Smyrna, write, these things says the first and the last. Who's the first and the last? Who's the one who was dead and came to life? Who is that?
Jesus.
Okay, you know that's Jesus. Say to that head leader there in that church, this is coming from Jesus himself, and these are the words of Jesus right here. I put them down here by itself, because this is Jesus talking to that head leader. I know your works. Is that singular or plural?
Singular.
Pastor, I know your works, your trouble, your poverty. And by the way, that's a word in Greek that means bad poverty, abject poverty. Like stuff you see on TV, like from India or somewhere, or other places all over. I'm not saying that we don't have this in America. You have it in America, too. I know your works. I know what's going on in your life, everything that you're doing. I know how poor you are, but you, singular, are rich. And I know the blasphemy, the insults of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. So this pastor in Smyrna, there's a Jewish temple there. There's, or I should say, a synagogue, a Jewish synagogue. And there's a group of people there, and they are a synagogue of Satan. They are not happy with this guy preaching Jesus, that Jesus is Israel's Messiah, that Jesus is the way to heaven, so on and so forth. They're insulting him. The insults, the jabs toward him. They're Jewish, but they're a synagogue of Satan, Jesus says. They're not on my team. Now, I want you to notice something, because you know, now you see singular use right here. What I was going to say, if you have a King James Version, it says, I know your works, but you are, it says the same thing. But in the next verse, Jesus continues, Pastor, don't fear any of those things which you, singular, are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you, and I put all, because it's not in the New King James Version, throw some of you. Now he goes to a plural, and I put the plurals in blue. In the old King James, it says here, the devil is about to throw some of ye into prison. Ye. That's interesting. In the old King James, where it's talking about more than one individual, you can see it. You don't lose that, because now that they got rid of the thous and the thys, you know, I know thy works. If you go back to the last, I know thy works. Okay, that's singular. But this is ye. It's about to throw some of ye into prison that ye may be tested, and ye will have tribulation. That's because it's Jesus is not, and you know what? People that spoke Greek, by the way, personally, I think that the writers of the Bible, I think they did it not to be monotonous, but people lose. You lose. Because, you know, I just think it would be better if they had put you all, or John Niemela, who's spoken here in our church, he's writing a commentary on John right now, and he's retranslated the whole book of John, and you know what he does in his commentary? He puts, he's about to throw some of you, and there's a black dot. A solid black dot right after that you in the whole book of John. Because what he's doing is he's saying, you all, whenever you see that black dot in my translation of John, it means plural. So handy. So handy. But like I said, if you have a King James laying around, collecting dust out of shelves somewhere, pull it out, and you can see, especially like in the epistles too. So cool. Okay, so what's Jesus saying to this leader? Don't fear any of those things which you, pastor, are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you all, including you, the pastor and church members. They're about to throw all of you, and by the way, this isn't literally the devil. The devil doesn't have handcuffs, okay? It's talking about those synagogue of Satan devils, okay? He's about to throw you all into prison that you all may be tested. By the way, in big church, I'm talking about the greatest test that Abraham ever went through. I'm talking about trouble and trials and tribulation and testing by God. The Bible says clearly God tested Abraham, and he tests us too all the time. You all, you pastor and the members, will have trouble for 10 days. And then he turns back to the pastor. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. Why does he do that? Why doesn't he say, and I'll give you all the crown of life? It's because seemingly the synagogue of Satan was going to make an example of the pastor. Okay? And he didn't tell him whether he was going to die or not. All he told the pastor was this: be faithful to the point of death. If they take you and stone you, you just confess my name. Don't turn back. Don't pull a Peter. Don't say, I don't know the guy that could be playing. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you, pastor, the crown of life. So it's sort of like, again, he turns away from the group, and he's talking to. So this is, there's only two churches in Revelation 2 and 3. Only two churches that don't get any critique from Jesus in the sense of a bad critique. Jesus doesn't say, hey, you know what, you're lazy. And I want to spit you out of my mouth, like he does in Laodicea. Ouch! Man, that would hurt if Jesus came to me and he said, "Hey, Bob, you're lazy. I'm going to spit you out of my mouth if you don't change." I'd hate to hear that. So, I'll give you the crown of life. Okay. So, yes.
Isn't it kind of much like them? Because these two churches that he doesn't have any complaints about, for the most part, are going to be the ones that are going to be visited by Satan. In order to, you know.
Yeah, they're already doing his will there in a lot of ways. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so, and the other one, by the way, was Philadelphia, the Church of Philadelphia, which means the city, you know, city of brotherly love. And they were percolating. They had a lot of love for one another. So, okay, our Lord's words in this passage we just read are similar, or I should say, were primarily written to the teaching elder of a church in the city of Smyrna. Now, at the end of all of the, when Jesus is speaking to all the churches, at the end Jesus says this: "He who has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches." Okay, why? Because these individual letters were going to be shared. Okay, at some point, Smyrna is not just getting the letter to Smyrna. Smyrna is going to get the letter to Ephesus because it's in the book of Revelation. They're going to get the whole tamale. So what he says to the whole church is, hey, listen, if you have got spiritual ears, obviously he's not talking about human ears, the person who's got a desire to hear from God, let him hear what the Spirit is saying to the church is plural, what he's saying to all of them. Thank you, brother. Oh, you didn't put any cold water in the hot water. I usually do half and half. That was like, okay, I'm awake. I'm awake. All right. So, so these words that we read were primarily written to the teaching elder right there. Near Smyrna. Isn't that cool? Jesus goes around the loop as he teaches. He says, to the pastor in the church of Ephesus, right, to the messenger there, right. He says, I know your works, and you're doing this well, and you're doing this well, and you're doing this well, but pastor of Ephesus, I've got something against you. What is it? You've left your first love. You don't love me, and you don't love your people like you once did. And he tells the guy, man, when you read what he's congratulating him about, whoa. That guy's, you know, we would read that and say, man, that guy's a stud. That guy's unbelievable. Jesus says, I have something against you. So, you know, we got to have ears, everybody. We think, well, I go to church every week. I give faithfully. I do. Hey, we all, hey, listen, this past week was my 45th spiritual birthday. 45th on June 20th, summer solstice. I haven't gotten over that, okay? But I've got, hey, just because I've got my ears open doesn't mean that or just because I've been doing this so long, it doesn't mean that I have to keep my ears open. I got to be listening more and more to Jesus. Why? Well, I think all of you heard, like, for instance, Tony Evans recently broke my heart. He had to resign his church. He was 2 years away from being at that church for 50 years. But he had to resign it. Now, they didn't bring up what the issue was, but it was something serious enough where he had to leave. And, you know, it doesn't do any good to try to speculate, so. But I'm just saying, that's heartbreaking. But, I mean, when I was praying this morning, I was saying, Lord, you know, life, the devil is very sneaky and subtle. The devil is a liar, and he can just, at the right moment, maybe at a moment you're not doing very well and you're low spiritually and maybe you're really depressed, man, the devil's going to come to you. You know what? He's been studying human beings for 6,000 years, right? He's been sitting there and just day in and day out. And he knows this person is weak in this person's weak in that. He comes like a machine gun, okay? And so, like, man, I'm sitting there in prayer today, man, Lord, if Tony Evans, who I look up to and I pray for him, I hope that he'll get all the help he needs and he'll be back in the battle. Because I know God's got a lot more things to do for him to do. But anyway, so you've got the pastor in Ephesus, but the pastor in Smyrna, man, he's hurt. He's just broke. He's getting trashed by the Jews in the synagogue in that city. And this is a very prosperous city, but not him and probably not his church. In verse 10, the Lord said to that pastor, "Be faithful to death, and I'll give you the crown of life." And you know, again, that's very difficult for you and I to relate to. You know? And I mean, we could take it in a generic way. We could take it in a general way. Hey, you know what? If we are faithful till the day we die, we'll get a crown of life, okay? And there's truth to that. But this, in this particular, he's saying, hey, you be faithful to death because they're about to kill you. And Jesus knew whether he would be martyred or not, but he didn't know. And he wasn't going to tell them. Why? He's testing them. The whole church was going to be tested for 10 days, but especially the pastor. Okay? So here's this pastor in a thriving area, and obviously not very many wealthy people were getting saved in his area. Okay? So, what I want to do this morning is I want us to put ourselves in the place of this church and this pastor and see if we can glean anything from this passage for our lives. And over the next few Sundays, we're going to be going through the different churches in Revelation. I think it's a great little mini study to do. Okay, now going back to Ephesians. Okay, we talked about the Apostle John and was told by Jesus to write a certain paragraph to that pastor there. And the situation now in Smyrna is just a man that's hurting. He doesn't get rebuke from the Lord, but he's close to being in prison. He's close to being martyred. And he needed strong words of encouragement from Jesus. Because the reason is, everybody, because when a believer is paying a price for their faith, nothing else will get a believer through that testing than the promises of God. Okay, let me repeat that. When you're going through the fire like Daniel's three friends, you remember they literally got thrown in the fiery furnace. They said, King Nebuchadnezzar, listen, you can threaten us all you want to with death, but just know, we're not going to bow down to your statue. We're not going to worship an idol. We worship the true God that made heaven and earth. And if we die, we die. And so he said, he was so angry, he said, stoke that furnace up, get it burning hot. As hot as it could possibly burn. And it was so hot that when they were taking the three children up there, the three men to throw into the fire, they died. The people that were taking them up croaked out because they got overcome by the heat. Crazy. But they threw them in there, and King Nebuchadnezzar's looking, and he's looking, and he sees three men, and then he sees a fourth person in there. Who was that? Again, the angel of the Lord, probably the Lord Jesus, a Christophany. Jesus appears, and the king can't believe it. So he yells for them to come out or something like that, and they come out, and their eyebrows aren't singed. Their clothing isn't touched. And obviously, it was just a miracle of miracles. And of course, it got a hold of Nebuchadnezzar. And by the way, I think that it brought Nebuchadnezzar to Jesus as their Messiah, or the coming Messiah. They didn't know his name was Jesus yet. But the Messiah that would come, Nebuchadnezzar believed. Why? Because when you read Daniel chapter 4, it's like a gospel tract. It's like his testimony of how he came to the true God. It's really wonderful. And so it's awesome. Okay, so verse 8 now. Let's go back and look at this a little deeper here. to the angel or the messenger or the teaching elder or the pastor of the church in Smyrna, write this, John. And these are the words of Jesus. These things says the first and the last, who was dead and came to life. Okay, question. Why do you think that Jesus would have told them that he was dead, but he came alive? Why would he tell him that pastor? Why would that be a blessing and encouragement?
Because one of them, he says unto death. Later on, he says that you may be tested unto death. So, he's giving him that insight into the fact that I was dead and now I'm here.
Yeah.
So.
Basically, listen, Pastor, I was human. You know, I went through pain and suffering. They threw rocks at me trying to stone me. And then, of course, the crucifixion and the scourging and all the things he went through. He was human. His best friend Lazarus died and he wept. And so he's telling this pastor, I'm a person who, as a man, as a human being, endured persecution, rejection, torture, murder. What people did to me, they want to do to you as well. And I understand your pain and your fear. And I believe the reason he said, and I came to life, he said, I not only paid an awful price on earth as a human being, but I also was resurrected from the dead. As pastor, you will be resurrected. Remember Jesus said in John 11, 25 through 27, I am the resurrection and the life. Jesus is resurrection, life, and he's eternal life. I'm the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he dies physically, he will live physically. And because he's the resurrection. But he's not only the resurrection, he's the life. And so Jesus goes on to say, and everyone who is alive and believes in me for eternal life, and everyone who is alive and believes in me will never die. Question. Spiritually or physically?
Spiritually.
Yeah. We're probably all going to die physically. And that's why it's so cool that Jesus is the resurrection. But what's also cool is that he's the life. So he says, everyone who is alive and believes in me will never, never die spiritually. Martha, do you believe this? Yes, Lord. I believe you are the Messiah, the Son of God. And so, let me go back. I got a story in my notes here. Back in the late 90s, when my dad was dying of Alzheimer's, he had Alzheimer's for like 5 years, 7 years, something like that. And it went from very mild, where he was doing the regular things people do with dementia. They run red lights and they forget where their keys are and they leave coffee on the stove for 2 days. Till the coffee is completely evaporated and the pot's practically melting on the stove. He went from basic unto there's 7 levels. And at the end, the last year, he had gotten down to like 83 pounds. And my little 5'2" mom, she could just pick him up and carry him around the house, you know. She was 72. She'd pick him up, carry him, diaper him, take care of him. But he never went in an Alzheimer's home, man. My mom, she's, you know, those old Croatians, man, those old Eastern Europeans, they're tough stock, man. They're like, don't tell me I'm putting them, I'm taking care of him, you know. And she was, of course, she was an earthly angel. I mean, she's like the greatest mom that ever lived on the earth. But anyway, I told a man in our church named Conrad Jacklin, he was going through Alzheimer's, and his wife Estelle, who was such a wonderful lady, I went and talked to Estelle, and I said, Estelle, would you be willing to call my mom and talk with her? Because right now my dad's just getting into what you've already gone through full bore. And she said, sure I would. And so my mom, later on, she thanked me. She said, oh, a lady from your church called me? Oh, it was so great, you know. And she was going on and on. So I figured she could help my mom in her time of suffering. So Jesus is kind of doing that with this pastor. Okay? He not only reminded him of how he suffered, he also reminded him that he had come to life, that he resurrected, he had victory over death. You know, O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is your victory? It's gone. Okay? Yeah, it might be there momentarily, but we know that we're all going to be together. You know, we used to sing that song, when we all get to heaven, what a day of rejoicing that will be. When we all see Jesus, we'll sing and shout the victory. All right? So, you know, this had to be amazing to get a personal letter from the Lord Jesus. I can imagine how discouraged that pastor had to be. I mean, you know, it says, I know your poverty, your abject poverty. That means he's going days without eating. I mean, wow, couldn't Jesus do something about that? Well, Jesus has purposes. And man, sometimes, you know, one time we had Tim Lee, who is an evangelist, and he has no legs because they got blown off in Vietnam. So he's in a wheelchair. We had him come and speak in our church. He was awesome. By the way, his name is on my PhD because he's one of the head people at Liberty as far as the board of directors is concerned. I was so excited, Gary, to see Tim Lee's name on my diploma. I was like, wow, that is so awesome. Tim Lee. Who else would you want on there, you know? And so, how encouraging it must have been to get this letter from Jesus and say, hey, I know this, I know this, I know this, don't worry. Hey, you may even have to give your life for my name. You stay faithful, I'll give you this eternal crown that you will rejoice over forever. Okay, now, we already talked about these things, all the things he's going through, tribulation, trouble, poverty. Jesus says, I know your deeds. I know what you're doing. I know how you're living. No problems there. I know your tribulation, your abject poverty. But then he says, look at this. You are rich. Huh? You're rich. Yeah. Yeah, you're rich. I know how bad things are for you, Pastor, and that you're broke, you're suffering greatly, but believe me, you are rich. This is Jesus talking. You know, why? Because he would be repaid with things that last forever and ever and ever. Okay? Verse 10, Jesus continues his words to the church leader. He says, those who are slandering you, they claim to be followers of God. They claim to be followers of me. They're not. They're not. They're murderers like the devil. Slanderers. He's a liar. He's a slanderer. The devil is a murderer, and they're just like he is. They murdered me, they want to murder you. Don't be afraid. Notice verse 10. Do not fear any of those things which you, Pastor, there's that singular again, you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil, and that, again, that's the people, the leaders in that synagogue, is about to throw some of you all into prison. That you all, you and the church family, may be tested. And you'll have trouble 10 days. So they're going to go through a terrible test that would only last 10 days. That's cool, isn't it? They knew if those guys came and grabbed them all, they knew how long that they would have to hang tough for. But then again, he turns to the pastor because he goes back to a singular you and he says, be faithful unto death and I will give you the crown of life. Okay? So that's not saying that if the other ones were martyred, he wouldn't give them. They'll get a crown of life too. But Jesus knows that they're not going to be martyred. He's like saying, Pastor, you're the only one in danger because you're the big kahuna. Okay? And you be faithful to the point of death, I'll give you a crown of life. Okay. So notice the two commands here. If you were to boil it all down, okay? Okay. Do not fear. Okay. So important, everybody. One of the commandments that Jesus gave us, God gave us in the Old Testament and the New Testament, is the idea of do not fear. And yet, Brother Gary.
That phrase, do not fear or don't fear, that's repeated 365 times in the Bible.
One for every day.
One for every day of the year.
Oh, yeah, one for every day of the year. Okay, cool. So, so this idea of not being afraid, when we're going to go in through a test, okay, you know, probably, I guess the biggest test in my life was, and right now I'm in a test, but it doesn't seem as bad as the one I had 20 years ago when I had a brain tumor behind my eye. And all of you that have had surgery, you know the famous talk you get by the doctor, right? You're laying there and you're in the robe that doesn't have a backside on it. And so you're sitting there and you're freezing, you know, back there. And so anyway, but you're sitting there and they're saying, okay, now we have to go over a few things. And first of all, this surgery can kill you. The surgery can make you blind. The surgery can make you deaf. This surgery can make you quadriplegic. And you're sitting there, oh, that's nice. That's very nice.
Good to know, huh?
Yeah, good to know. But they have to do it. They have to do all those things to everybody that, you know. And so you're sitting there but you know what, man, God was so good. I told you this recently that I was just like a kid sitting in a candy store. I was so, the peace of God that passed all of understanding. It doesn't always work this way, but I had that amazing peace. I was just sitting there, and I'm just like, hey, it's in God's hands. And so many people, there were like 50 or 60 people from the church and neighbors and friends that were in the waiting room there. It's cram-packed. But I was sitting there and trying to make sure that nobody saw my backward parts, like it says about God and Moses. Remember that in the Bible? God passed by, but it really means the afterglow. God's glory came by, but anyway, but I was so, had such peace. I'll tell you another cool story. This is months before, and I had to go see the brain surgeon, Dr. Barnett. You've had Dr. Barnett do your back surgery.
Twice.
Yeah, twice. He's a stud. And talk about a memory. When I went, and I was over there when she was having, I think, the second surgery?
No, the first one.
The first one, yeah. That's right. Because Dr. Barnett comes in the room, and I'm sitting there with Jamie and Charlotte, and he goes, hello, Robert. It's 20 years after my surgery. I'm like, holy smokes, I can't remember the guy's name from last week. He remembered my 20. No wonder he's a brain surgeon. You know, he's probably in at night going, up there, okay, fix that nerve. But you know what that guy did for me? I was supposed to have a 4-hour surgery, and one of my best friends was the anesthesiologist. He told me after the surgery, he said, Bob, at 4 hours, it was so tangled up that, he said, most brain surgeons that I know would have sewed you up and said, we're putting him on chemo and radiation because we can't take that tumor out. Dr. Barnett said, I'm getting this tumor out of the brain of this preacher. And he worked 5 more hours under the microscope, moving nerves. The only damage I had was the left side of my face, the left side of my tongue, inside of my mouth. I lost my feeling. Now I've only got like 5% feeling. You know, 2 weeks ago when I had my great big shiner because I got whacked with my own chainsaw. You know what's great? When that happened, I didn't even feel it. And I was like, oh! And I went right here. In fact, right here, I think I mildly broke my bone right here. But right there, there was a nickel-sized blood clot right there, a blood thing. And it, what happened? It was flesh filling up with blood. It felt like a marble. Like, oh my goodness, I said. And then Jared came over to me and said, ooh, that was a bad one. But I said, but I really didn't hardly feel anything. I felt the thing smacking me over. But anyway, so yesterday I was using that same chainsaw, but I was using it on this side. So, but anyway, that was probably the hardest thing I went through was the brain tumor and surgery and the recovery and all that. But crazy thing is most people, they are out for 8 or 9 months from that. And the doctor says, you can't leave your house for a month. And I said, okay. But on the fifth Sunday, I was back in church preaching. I'm like, I'm not waiting 8 or 9 months. I'll go nuts. And so I came back on the fifth Sunday. It was really cool. In fact, I snuck in on the fourth Sunday because I could actually leave after 1 month. So I came during the service, and I was just kind of peeking in the hallway and everything. But then I just took off so I wouldn't get mugged by everybody. And I looked pretty bad. You know, I had half my head was shaved. I looked kind of goofy. You know, this is like normal. And this half was just kind of like, I just had a buzz cut now because it was 1 month, you know. So it was like kind of, yeah. So
teenagers would think you're cool.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, especially if I had put pink on that.
Yeah. You
know? Purple. Okay. So, okay. So the two commandments that we have to check, remember here. Don't fear. Okay. When we go through trouble, whether it's trouble like they're going through or whatever kind of trouble. In church, I'm talking about trouble. We're talking about the worst testing that Abraham ever went through. Because we're talking about ordinary people who have great trust, great faith in what God's doing. Ordinary people. We've already done 4 or 5 of them. We're doing like several more. But don't fear, be faithful. Isn't that great? Don't fear, be faithful. Don't fear, be faithful. Don't fear, be faithful. That right there, that's a microcosm. It's like boil it all down. When we go through trouble, anytime we go through trouble, don't be afraid. God, the Bible tells us that God is watching us continually, right? He's got his eye upon us 24/7. And he's told us, ask and you'll receive, seek and you'll find, knock on the door. Okay, so I'm sure that pastor was going to God saying, God, don't you know? I'm only eating every third day. God, don't you know? Didn't you say you were going to provide? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not lack. And see, what he had to do is he had to say, okay, obviously God's testing me right now. God's testing me. Okay? And so, number one, the last thing I want to do is, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? All right. I'm glad I put that swivel thing on there. But anyway, number one, everybody, like for instance, you know, Kelly's dad gave her that 2006 Jaguar. It's the most beautiful car on earth. When we went down to San Antonio and we got to the hotel a few weeks ago for that 42nd wedding anniversary, and then, of course, my whole family met us down there, which was really cool. But when we pulled up, what was so cool was that the three baggage guys, and they were like 20 years old, and they're looking at the grill on the car and everything. And I got out. I said, do you like that? I said, this car is almost 20 years old. They said, oh, this car is cool, man. And they really liked it. Which, you know, okay, that's your cup of tea. That's cool. You know. But anyway, but get this. So Kelly's dad gave her, he said, hey, listen, I'm old. I can't drive anymore. Take the car. And he said, I'd love for you to have it. So she took the car. Well, of course, what happens? The engine blows. It's only got, you know, 70,000 miles. And the engine blows. And it's not on a little car. It's not like an engine that it costs like $2,000. The engine costs $8,000 or $9,000. And then, you know, we're waiting and waiting, and they get the engine and they put it in there, and they realize, oh no, this is not the right engine. And so they said, we gotta find another engine that's 20 years old. So they find one that's got like 80,000 miles on it, I think. I said, great. And so, but here's what I was thinking. Okay. Here's how Kelly and I looked at it. Okay. New cars cost a lot of money now.
Yep.
Used cars cost a lot of money now.
Yep.
Okay. And we can drop on a used car easily $15,000-$20,000. Okay. But we've got this car that's like in perfect condition outwardly. It's kind of like an old person, ailing on the inside, good on the outside. You know, kind of like Pastor Bob, because I didn't tell you, I had a brain tumor 20 years ago. Now I've got heart blockages. Oh my goodness. But you know what, again, don't fear. So anyway, but you know, I said, well, you know what, look, yeah, it's a buku of money, but the thing is that if the whole car like got destroyed in a wreck, you know what the insurance company do? You're paying them like, what, $4,000 a month for car insurance? And then they come and say, oh, that beautiful Jaguar that's like state of the art here, here's your $4,000 for that used car that's 20 years old, you know. What? I paid four times that much in the last 5 years to you shysters. Okay, that's what happens. And so anyway, so we didn't fret about it. We just said, hey, it's life. Things blow up. Things go bad. Radiators get holes in them. And generators don't generate anymore, and so on and so forth. Okay, so don't fear and be faithful. Just, it's, what is God looking for? Well done, good and faithful servant. Good, not being afraid, faithful. Man, isn't that just so cool? Jesus is still on this kick. In the Gospels, he's telling his 11, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in a little. I'll make you ruler over much. And he's still on this kick after he's up in heaven at the right hand of the Father. He's still like, be faithful, be good, or don't fear, don't be afraid, and be faithful. He's still doing that. And so it's really awesome. Okay, now, what we've got to do here, ding, ding, ding. Okay, we've got to do this before we go on. Okay, almost time to go. Here's how he ends the letter to, here's how he ends the letter to the church in Smyrna. And to all the churches, because all the churches need to hear this.
Okay.
This isn't singular or plural. This is everyone that's getting this letter, whenever it is, including our church. He, of course that's generic, he or she, the one who overcomes. By, I've told you this before. This is the Greek word where we get the word Nike from, like Nike tennis shoes. That's the goddess of victory in Greek mythology. But it's the word that meant victory to Greeks. That's why they called her. Her name was Nike, or something along those lines. It might have been, had a female ending on it or whatever. But anyone who is victorious for me, be faithful unto death. Whoever is victorious shall not be hurt by the second death. Well, Jesus, that's a strange thing to say to people who are never going to be touched by the second death. Why would he say that to believers? Why would he say, hey, Mike, you be faithful unto death, and guess what? You won't go to hell. Okay. Well, sorry to get it. It looks rickety, but it's not. It's embedded into brick behind there. Okay. So, he who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death. Now, this is what you would call a problem passage, because all the Calvinists and the Arminians that say you could lose your salvation, they say, see, if you're not victorious for God, you're going to hell. That's impossible. That's, you guys, it's impossible for somebody who has put their faith in the Lord Jesus for eternal life. It's impossible. I don't care if they're the biggest waste of human flesh after they've believed that's ever walked the face of the earth, okay? They could be literally just an awful human being. That, number one, that doesn't give you eternal hell. It gives you hell on earth. And then you get like zip rewards in heaven. You're like, you're going to have very few.
You get to sit on the steps out there.
Yeah, you're going to kind of be on the sidelines, you know. But you're not going to go, because Jesus promised you will never perish. No one will pluck you out of my hand. You will never die spiritually. You'll never perish. You'll never go to hell. Over and over. Hey, when Jesus, listen, if Jesus promises this will never happen to you, guess what? This is never going to happen to any believer. So then why would he say it to believers? Here's why. He's using a figure of speech that you and I use all the time. And I got to go quickly, but I'm going to give you two examples and you'll say, ah, I get it. Okay, he's using a rhetorical device, a device that we use all the time and we don't even know it. It's called litotes, litotes, L-I-T-O-T-E-S, litotes. And I know none of you maybe know that word at all. That's fine. You don't need to know it. But we do that all the time in everyday speech. Let me give you some examples. Wow. You won't go unrewarded for doing that. That means this. You're just saying it in reverse. So litotes is when you reverse something in order to exaggerate. Man, that guy's no Babe Ruth. See, you're always going to be using the negative. Not. No. We do it all the time. That guy's no so-and-so. That girl's no, you know, that's litotes. And we use it all the time, but we just don't know we're even doing it. What you're doing is you're using the negative you're doing it to make an emphasis. You're using exaggeration. You'll be greatly repaid. It's a negative exaggeration. You won't go unrewarded. So let me go backwards. Okay? He who is victorious shall not, there's the negative, shall not be hurt by the second death. What Jesus is saying, let me give you two more and we'll be done. You'll be greatly repaid. How about this one? That quiz was no snap. What does that mean? Well, that quiz was really tough. That quiz was hard. Okay. This is what Jesus is doing. Christian, you be a victorious Christian for me with your life, and you won't be hurt by the second death. There is the not. There's the negative. Your reward will be life at its very best. Okay? And I have to let you go there. If you have any questions, come and see me right now. But I have to give everybody a chance to get ready for church. And thank you. And Ed, thank you for the boiling hot tea. Thank you.